עוד פודקאסט? עוד פודקאסט. עוד פודקאסט לסטארט-אפים.
אלכס.
It's me and you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for having me and thanks us for having you. So what's up?
Look, I am just grateful to be here. I thought a lot about this conversation and I thought about, as an entrepreneur, what do I want to hear? Because I think I'm a little bit of a unique guest in certain ways that I have a startup myself now, right? And I'm in the process. I started the startup seven months ago. So I'm actually in the process of exactly what our listeners are going to be going through, which is finding my first couple customers.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful for the opportunity to kind of organize these thoughts and present it to you. So thank you so much for having me, my friend.
Amazing. So we are part of our masterclass, specifically about sales for early stage founders. And before diving in, maybe you can tell a few words about yourself and about your background.
Yeah. So just start off as Privet. Shalom, hello. I'm a multicultural cat. My mind is San Francisco, but I was born in Kishinev, Moldova. I lived 2 years also in Moscow, but you know, you can't say the R word right now. So, but I've lived there, San Francisco, Russia, and now Israel. And I'll tell you, you know, we talk about immigrant work ethic a lot as friends. My first definition of myself is immigrant, right? Nobody owes me anything. I'm here to create the reality for myself through a lot of very hard work. And the first business I started was in San Francisco. I had a $3,000 loan. I didn't come from money. There was not somebody who was just, you know, bankrolling this with money. It's something, somebody just gave me $3,000 loan to start a business, and it grew into a multi-million dollar profitable process. It was one of the largest food and beverage catering and event production companies in San Francisco.
Amazing.
Right? And we're talking about just from the beginning, starting something. Build up this opportunity, this business from nothing. It was my baby. It was a social business that actually employed people from prisons. So I spent a lot of time going to prisons and teaching about entrepreneurship. And in about 2017, 2018, I have three kids. I'm living in San Francisco, my wife and I. And my wife is Israeli. We have the decision. Are we going to stay in San Francisco or are we going to move back to Israel and raise our kids there? And I had the question that most Israelis ask me. You came from San Francisco to Israel, right? And yes, we made the move. And I had this vision, like I think all entrepreneurs have this vision of we have this ability to, we can just, you know, go across mountains. And I said, okay, I'm going to move to Israel and I'll run my business remotely. And within a year and a half, I was bankrupt, lost everything. And I tell this story to people because I want to give them the context of where I'm coming from, because the skills that I'm sharing with you are feeding my family today. It's deeply personal what I'm sharing with you. I have three kids. My wife is an educator. She's an amazing educator. But I'm responsible primarily.
Bringing the bread home.
Yeah. And we're equal partners. But financially, it's my responsibility, right? So just to give you a highlight, I want to share the story so you get a context of not just you speaking, not just from an entrepreneur who's succeeded, but also entrepreneurship is a tough side we have to be prepared for. Our company was feeding 1,000 people. It was a large event, 1,000 people event. It was a $125,000 job. I was in Israel at that time. My team loaded up the truck with a food for 1,000 people. You can imagine how big the truck is, right? Rental, linens, everything. 3 o'clock in the morning, 5 o'clock in the morning, I get a phone call from my right hand, my chef. The truck is stolen. 2 days later, they found the truck with all the food rot and everything. We lost $125,000 in 2 hours. The business was dead. So I want to highlight to the old entrepreneurs who are listening, imagine building a business for 4 years. Imagine moving to Israel with the intention of having this business feed your family. And imagine being bankrupt, losing everything. With a thing that you think wasn't even under your control. And now starting again. That's the immigrant mentality. That's the reality that all of us as entrepreneurs have to have. So I speak to you not from a place of like, I figure it out. No, I'm in the journey with you. And most recently, I had the pleasure of now, you know, rebuilding my career. When you're in Israel and you want to make some money and you have a family, you can only do one thing. You sell software. So that's, and I had the privilege of selling software for a few years. And then most recently, deciding in December of this year, January, of starting a business development agency, an SDR agency, you can say, specifically focusing on one problem. And the problem is, how do you raise money over the next 6 months as a pre-seed to A round company? And of course, I made the decision to start that in the worst time over the last 12 years to raise money.
Market is tough.
Market is challenging, okay? So, and so far, we had a lot of traction. You know, we schedule around 30 VC meetings per month for our portfolio companies, and we have around 4.5 million term sheets that we've raised for our clients. So it's going in the right direction. Now, I want to start off kind of my theory and my approach with kind of just referencing my favorite person right here. That's you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Surprising slide.
Right. That's you. It's in a, and that's not guy to the right. That's a Hasidic man, which I'll refer to in a second. But I want to highlight why I shared this slide. Last week, I was speaking to a prospect.
Prospect of you.
Of mine, yeah.
Meaning a founder, just to set the stage. Meaning a founder that you want to work with and help him fundraise from investors and offering him your services.
Exactly, right. And just to highlight, it was an Israeli founder.
Yes.
80% of my prospects right now and the companies I work with are Israeli companies. So he asked me, you know, basically, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself, right? He shared about his business and they asked that, tell me about yourself. And the key word for tell me about yourself is actually just means, why should I trust you? That's how I understand the word. Tell me about who you are. And I said to him, here's my, how I handle that question, right? And I said to him, you know what? I want you to know that all I think about is just one small problem in my business. How do I help founders raise money over the next 6 months? And because I think only about that one problem, I have really great conversations because of that specific focus.
Yeah.
And it allows me to have a lot of insights into sharing a process I believe is accurate. And I get to learn a lot. And because I only focus on one problem, and you as a CEO focus on so many problems, maybe I have a lot of value to you. And here's the caveat. Ready for this? And this I think I like. I said to him, the people who trust me to solve this problem are individuals like Guy Katsowich.
Mm. You name drop me?
I name drop you all the time.
All right.
Right. Not only that, I say, by the way, next week, Guy has taken out of the studio and has invested a tremendous amount of money to bring me in to have this conversation.
Mm.
He trusts me to such an extent that he's willing to invest in his own time into a professional studio with one of the best studios in the country.
Woo!
That's right. To have this conversation.
So we're talking here about social signaling and creating some social reviews.
It's what I would say to your point, it's trust.
Yeah.
At the core, business is based on trust. And what I look at it, especially when we're looking at our initial clients, we're asking is, you know, how can I build trust when essentially I'm not trustworthy? That's a tough thing to do. How can I get I need clients to build trust, but I need trust to build clients. It's a little bit of a vicious cycle, right? So how do we do that? And I have a theory about it.
So let's talk about this chicken and egg problem and how we might be able to solve it.
Yeah, right. So, and by the way, you know, when we talked, when you say, Alex, can you come in and can you talk about LinkedIn? I know you're doing really well in England and you're an SDR and you know, the way you and I met is because, you know, one of your portfolio companies recommended me as like an SDR that could give a lot of value because I worked for a portfolio company, Fusion. So it's a little strange that I'm actually going to, the first 10 minutes of this conversation are going to be about not traditional SDR work at all. And I'll explain why. I think that we are seeing a massive change in trust in the marketplace. We've seen that in deepfakes. We've seen that in ChatGPT. Outbound cold outreach is becoming better and better. So I believe that the notion of understanding how to build trust is going to be more and more significant.
More important than using spray and pray email or LinkedIn outreach. Okay?
I believe in this country, I have a lot of insights into the effective cold outreach. I do, because I think about that a lot. And I'll show you that towards the end. I promise you guys, you know, take a, you know, maybe open up the Netflix on the other screen. This will come in 10, 15 minutes. I'll show you. But I'm believing in what I'm doing that more and more time is being spent on warm relationship building.
Let's talk about it.
And then you can see the image in the background is these Hasidim. I want to highlight why did I choose these Hasidim. Not because I have maybe like a desire to have that kind of beard, because they look like just a bunch of hipsters. But also, at a certain point, 20, 30 years ago, 80% of all diamond uncut gems went through Antwerp. The whole supply chain was controlled by these people.
Mm.
That has changed recently because of India. But these individuals had a direct control of the entire diamond supply chain. And do you know why that was? What's your thoughts about why these Hasidim had that level of access?
Small community, knew each other well, knew is trustworthy and knew is not.
Yeah.
All right.
And not only that, is that what happens in the diamond industry, what you do is you actually give product and only get paid on terms maybe 3 to 6 months later. It's a tremendously risky business.
Yeah, Shotef plus Meastream.
Meastream, exactly. Now, who are you going to trust to that level of confidence that if I give you something, I shake hands with you?
Just someone that you know, and you also have a lot of, I would say, external pressures on him to really keep his promise. So you would know that if he won't pay you, the price that he will pay will be higher than the profit.
And in a close community, like the Hasid community, if you are known to be a liar, you and your children are going to have a direct impact on your status.
Yeah.
It's a status-oriented community. So therefore, they had that tremendous success over controlling the supply chain because they were able to shake hands, give millions of dollars worth of product, knowing that the money come in 6 months.
Amazing. So I love the notion of where this conversation is going. I would love us to move a bit forward just in terms of being time sensitive.
So now look at what, now I'm speaking right now towards Israeli founders. And yeah. I want you, and I'm going to give some use cases that I'm seeing. We think about, well, I'm a founder. So where is my warm network practically? Who are my Hasidim? Who is my tribe? And I'm going to give some very interesting examples of what we're seeing. Let's take a look at, for example, let's look at the army. We have a certain entrepreneur that I know very well. His first company, his first client, customer, came because that decision maker that owns that specific unit of this corporate, they served together very closely in the army.
Yeah.
Right? Very simple model here. We don't need to go cold outreach. Let's look at another option right here. Your lawyer. We're seeing a very interesting pattern across my clients right now, where they're basically asking their lawyers and their accountants, PwC, Perk Cohen, do you have any leads for me?
Yep.
Because these lawyers and these accountants are also the lawyers and accountants of other companies.
And I would just remind at this point, for those who are just listening to this podcast, that we have this also on a video YouTube version. And you can see here in a slide that Alex is presenting a bunch of logos that represent different type of, let's call that, silos or community-related entities, whether it's the army, law firm, VCs, friends and family, that can help us as individuals to utilize our connections in order to get warm introductions and leads, right? So
exactly. Yeah. That's what you're seeing. Let's look at a few that might be you're not familiar with. We're seeing Israel Economic Missions are amazing partners. When, for example, Guy takes his portfolio companies on a roadshow, Austin, San Francisco, Los Angeles, you should know that there are individuals in each one of those hubs that their whole job and their KPI is setting up conversations and meetings for you.
Yeah.
How to leverage those people? That's a great question. But I've seen with my own eyes, with my customers and prospects, they're effectively leveraging individuals they don't have to pay for as part of the Israel ecosystem, right? Very, very powerful avenue of directions. And obviously, the one that you should know, of course, is friends, family, and fools.
Yeah.
Of course. Those are going to be the individuals that you're going to target that are have their relationships. Now, remember, the content here that I'm highlighting is, it's all about who can vouch for me, who trusts me enough to say this is the right person for you to solve this problem.
Yeah.
So how do we make that introduction really work well? What's the process and that we do that? Very simple. You know, focus on when you're sharing your list of this are people I want you to connect me to, what is that person have to gain from this conversation? really crucial. Not what you have to gain from it, right? We always think it's about us. But in sales and in businesses, in this point, it's about how can I benefit? And there's really only a few different categories of how you can benefit.
Yeah.
One could be with an investment process. Well, they fit your thesis. Therefore, I think they're relevant. And in terms of impact, some individuals, they feel like they want to give back. So it's a social piece. Like, we believe there's
an entrepreneur. I want to help. I want to give advice. I want to be involved. Yeah, right. I want to do good.
You want to do good.
And I'll say to people, sorry for cutting you, Alex.
No, you're
don't underestimate the amount of people that will be willing to meet you just for the sake of feeling better about themselves and feeling that they contribute. And they can actually, of course, contribute and give concrete advice. But don't underestimate good-hearted feelings of people.
Yeah. Oh, I'll tell you that in my business, that's made the biggest change is that my mentors were very wealthy individuals. Much, you know, this one guy that I was very close to in San Francisco, literally every email he responded, he only responded. There was never a time he responded more than three letters.
Yep.
He was so busy. But boy, he loved me. He loved me because he saw this guy who just, like, he just was so genuine, man. I have kids and I have his business and I'm hustling. He looked at me and said, man, I see a younger me in you. And boy, I love you. And we had such a close relationship, right? Give the outline of the intro, who you are, what the business value proposition is, what's the team, what are you looking for? Again, just give that to your connection to make that connection and let them personalize it, right? That's the template is important, but realize if it's a personal connection, they will personalize this directly. Now, I want to highlight this point, and what I've shared so far, you've heard in the past. But I'm noticing this other thing that's really crucial. You have to always challenge your relationships. And the way that we challenge our relationships is by asking for support. Now, for example, if you have a certain person you believe is your ally, but he's not willing to open up his network for you, it's a really great question to a great, strong, difficult conversation. We're seeing that right now in the fundraising space. When you go to a board member and you say, can you make an intro to this set of investors? When he makes that intro, he's basically saying, I trust this person. And if he says no, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, guy?
I think that I agree. And it goes down really deep in terms of people that are utilizing or trying to utilize their network or extended network, because we have a different definition. It's a soft term of what that network is. And sometimes I get reach outs from people that I would assume think that I'm part of the network because we bumped into each other in an event or we sat for coffee a few years back, and then they want my help. And for me, it's not just the timing of their approach or what would they ask for me, let's say an intro to an investor or to a client, yeah, but also the context, the meta, the way they do it. If they do it in a very casual way after a few years that we didn't talk to each other and just assume that I would help without giving me context, or if they try to get coffee with me and grab my time without really explaining upfront what do they want, yeah, what happened over the last few years, in a few liners, just be very concrete about it. I talk about it in my networking workshop. Yeah. So this whole slide for me is an art, is a lecture of an hour and a half explaining how to do it right.
Yeah.
And it's so important, this notion of not just understanding that I can utilize my network, I need to also understand the other side's value, speaking with me or helping me, then helping other people, helping us, and sending all the right info probably upfront in order to make the other side, you know, more approachable and better understand what I need from him.
So to add to what you just said,
yeah,
when I do this exercise with my clients, I ask them to rate their warm network, right? So from 1 to 10. And then remember this, if you are asking an individual for a warm intro, they are putting their social capital on the line.
Yes.
And you better realize, if this person says no, that's okay. But it just shows you, oh, I thought he was a 10. I thought that this person was so... It's a great way to test the relationship.
Yep.
Right? Now, we're going to go into understanding, well, how do we leverage this in one specific tool? And I know that the people who are listening on the podcast, this is specifically we look at Sales Navigator. Now, there's a lot of
LinkedIn
tools out
Sales
there.
Navigator.
LinkedIn Sales Navigator. If you've never had a premium license, you can get that for a month for free. There's a lot of tools out there, but I want to highlight a few different points that we can leverage in LinkedIn Sales Navigator. And again, there's many other tools that may be similar to Sales Navigator. Things change all the time, but the principles are similar. And I'll highlight some tools that I like that are very useful here. So if we, for example, are looking at new clients, right, new prospects that could be a good fit, what I recommend, first of all, is identify any employees that have the persona that you're targeting. So, example, that you sell HR software.
Yeah.
The first thing you want to do is look at any HR professionals that work, aka they worked at a company in the past that you currently is a client. So, for example, Monday.com is currently a client. They're a happy client. Very simple. Find HR professionals that worked at Monday.com.
Past company.
Past company. Reach out to them and say, look, we're doing this successful POC. At Monday, I think it might be a good fit.
Why is it that important? Because they know that the company that they worked with you, so it's trustable?
So there's two reasons. Number one is they will be able to say, okay, I'm already understanding he did this research on me. Mm. It's personalized. Oh, he knows I worked on Monday, and that's why he's referencing Monday. It cannot be, at least with ease, like automated. So there's a personal, oh, he cares about me enough to actually do the work. Number two, she can easily have as a reference point of she can call the HR manager and that say, are you guys working with these guys? How's that going? So she has a good reference point. So again, builds trust much faster. Okay? So that's really good. If you don't have a client, then what you could do is you could look at HR managers, for example, of companies that you've personally worked at in the past.
Yeah.
And that could be the connection. Now, let's take a look at one of the things that we see a lot, if people want to target the U.S., okay, for clients, it's great, makes sense. But how do I find my tribe in the U.S.? Well, the way that I advise individuals, if you're an Israeli company initially, let's identify it first. Let's find out individuals who are most likely part of your tribe, which is other Israelis. Well, you can't, on LinkedIn, Sales Navigator, the point, you cannot say, I'm actually looking for, like, Israelis.
You can.
You cannot yet do that. You know, you cannot do that. So how do you do that? It's actually very simple. The way you would find Israelis on Sales Navigator, by the way, I like guys' face, if you guys see the video, he's like, interesting. The way that you do that is you basically identify the schools that those people went to. Mm. So if you focus on Tel Aviv University, if you focus on Reichman University, if you focus on Ben-Gurion, but the geography is the U.S., then you start basically building out your list of people who were in Israel at a certain point, have left, and are now in those geographies. So you can actually effectively target Israelis if you wanted to.
Okay? Got it.
Now, the other way is if you are saying, well, we know that there are certain universities, for example, that have a greater Jewish population, right? An assumption is if you're someone Jewish, there's a higher chance they may have that, again, that tribal connection with you. Or, for example, evangelical connection. That's why what we have in the previous slide here, what we have is affiliate colleges. You could actually go to Hillel.com and find out what is the percentage, the highest percentage of universities with the Jewish population. You can also look at evangelicals who are very much aligned with Israel on an emotional level. You can find evangelical colleges that do the same thing. So colleges are just an amazing way of finding it. Another two or three options you can look at. Connections. You can actually search by connection. So if I guy, show me any connection that's guy's first degree connection. Very effective. Or you could find, say you went to 8200. There's alumni groups. Great way to identify prospects by groups, you can get there, okay? The last thing I want to highlight when it comes to LinkedIn, and there's maybe just two quick things here. Number one is, you know, it's like, if I want to meet up with somebody, you want to make sure they're there. Like, you know, I want to go out to, you know, I want to find, I'm an ultra-Orthodox person, so I'm not, maybe this would become scandalous, but say I want to find a wonderful partner in my life, you know, and she has to be a certain age and she has to be a certain look that I'm looking for. So when I look at the option of clubs that I can go to, it's like, where's the club that has this type of profile? So I go to that place to find that girl. If you want to identify and connect with people on LinkedIn, one of the good ways to know if they're going to be there is have they actually been active in the platform? Do they go to the club? Are they dancing there or not? That's why we highlight, you spotlight on activities or posts of the last 30 days. If they are active on the platform, that means that is a channel that most likely they'll be able to be found there. Got any thoughts on that?
Makes sense.
Yeah. Last thing. I have a lot of Israeli founders who love using automation. They're using things like GrowthX. They're using things like Meet Alfred and others. There's a lot of... I want to highlight just the thing is like I'm comfortable with automation, but three things. First of all, we strongly recommend you should limit things to only 20 outreaches per day, right? So it's actually a very small data set, 20 individuals. Two is there, if LinkedIn is a big channel, like for me, I no longer use any automation because the chances, the risk of getting blocked is way too much risk. So if you already know you can only do 20, then maybe you should consider not using an automation tool. Okay, this is another piece that I want to highlight that we're seeing a lot of success right now. It's really interesting. And I want to give you the exact numbers that we're seeing our prospects are using right now. This is not theory. We're doing this every single day. In order to be able to get your customers, maybe the first thing you should do is look at advisory board members. Okay, what's an advisory board member? It's an ex-C-suite, aka basically a decision maker at the company that you would be targeting, who left that company, and he is basically respected in the industry. What you do is you reach out to that individual. You say, look, I'm an early stage company. I just got funding from Guy. We're at this stage of the business, and at this point, we're looking for design partners and first customers. And part of that process, we're identifying the great advisory board. Can we have a conversation? The chances of, if that individual is an ex, two is he's in the consultancy space or he's retired, the chance of him having a conversation, we're seeing, Guy, you're not going to believe this. I'm telling you, when I said there's no way that this is true, zero. I'm seeing startups talk to for 3 hours without getting a dollar with ex-C-suite of billion-dollar companies.
Just with the premise of, after I'll raise, you'll get some compensation and, a promile of equity.
They didn't even talk about the financials yet.
All right. So just with the notion of, I need an advisor.
And what they say is, yeah, I'd be happy to talk to you. So you already have an hour there of conversation. Usually you don't have to pay anything for that hour. Okay? What we do see right now, interesting enough, is that, again, if you align with that individual and they believe in you, You could start at a $2,000 retainer per month with the idea that they'll get paid at the time of when you raise the next round, and 0.5% of equity that's vested over 3 years. Hmm. What do you get for that? You could get 1 to 2 hours of coaching once a week and introductions directly to potential customers where they will go on the call with you. Right. So if I didn't see it myself or I haven't done it, I would say I'd never believe this. Why would that senior of a person decide to go on an advisory to a company like yours? But my friend, Guy, I'm seeing it. As they say, proof is in the pudding. Any feedback on your perspective on this?
No, it's a great way. And we also recommend that to our portfolio company. So do that.
Please.
Do that. It's called, we call that customer advisory board.
A customer advisory board.
Yeah, because you can have other advisory board members that are more from the investment side or from the market side or from the strategic side or from the business side or from the scientific side. But when you want to bring them on board in order to help you reach to your ICP, initial customer profile, to your potential first few clients, then these are actual advisory board members that are also customer advisory board members because they help you understand your ICP, how to reach to them, and also make the actual connections and help you onboard those clients, those first clients, to your platform.
And what's the compensation that you're advising your
clients? I think this is pretty much the benchmark in terms of the offer. If you look at the slide here, you said $2,000 of retainer paid at the time of the next round. And then let's say 0.25 to 0.75% of equity vested. That would be the benchmark. The retainer thing is new for me, but this is actually a good way to keep them more engaged if you see that you have no leverage just with the equity.
And how many advisors do you typically advise your portfolio companies to have in a
customer
really,
set? It depends on the market. It depends. The VC Keter Cookie answer that it depends. It depends on the market. It depends on other channels that might be more useful for you to bring clients right now. If you see that you can bring a lot of clients with other go-to-market strategies, then do that. But this could be a very, very efficient, legit, and valuable one.
Yeah.
And of course, you need to be very impressive and very engaging and very up to listen to someone that knows much better than you in the industry.
Right. We're seeing one of our customers, what have been really powerful is, again, they bring that guy on the customer call.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting modality when you have the senior person say, look, I think that this is a really valid solution. It's a very powerful statement right there.
Yeah.
We do also recommend if you are in the process of raising funds or something, you can have the advisor do a video, just a 30-second, 1 minute on their phone, just say why I believe this is relevant. Like, I believe in, from my experience, this is where this fits. It's a very powerful, powerful testimonial. All right. I want to talk about, now we're going to get into the cold outreach a little bit. Now, the slide that you're looking at or listening to, If Slides Could Talk, I think that should be a podcast name. If Slides Could Talk.
You can do that.
So what I'll just highlight here is that, it's a traditional, basically, spiral. From many conversations, you get a few different customers. And what I want to highlight is these buckets. Every customer, every kind of company has different buckets of where the customers could come from. Either different portfolio, different personas, different ICPs. It could be, initially you might be targeting the VP of R&D, but actually your real champion is going to be in the QA component. Like, it takes a little time to figure out where the champion is.
Yeah.
It's a reality. It's going to take a lot of conversations. And what I want to show you is, now we're going to be looking at a case study of, this just happened 2 weeks ago. The company was using cold outreach methodology that we were running, and then we're going to break this down together. This company basically is going to unlock $2 million of funding from this process. So I'm going to show you step by step. This company got a term sheet directly at the valuation they wanted to from a UK-based, actually, I can tell you, it's Cedar Capital. So a mass, this is one of the leading funds. Israeli company we're shooting this in the middle of, a very challenging environment. It's an Israeli company.
Cold outreach.
Cold outreach. Entirely cold. This is not warm.
Let's investigate.
Let's try to see what this is about. How did this work? And what do we see from it? Okay. So the way that it starts in our process is these buzzwords, right? The buzzwords means, give us what the ICP is looking for. So in our case, this is, diagnostics, AI, impact, pre-seed, early stage, Israel, mental health. These are the, say, if I was the VC, these are the areas I'm investing in. This is what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
So from there, what we're doing is we're essentially checking the VC's websites to identify, okay, do they have these keywords? Okay. For those who are nerdy and they want to go, they can look at clay.com, a very impressive piece of technology where you can actually scrape keywords on websites of VCs.
Just VCs.
Oh, any website.
I'm just kidding.
Exactly. But you can basically input, these are the words I'm looking for. Tell me if those websites have those words.
Yeah.
Cool, cool piece of technology. They're getting better, better again. Clay.com. So step one, you talk to an entrepreneur. Tell me exactly the type of ICP keywords. So if you are looking for customers, okay, innovation officer. It could be HR specialist. It could be this person appeared on podcast. Whatever it may be, you identify that. Okay, step one. Now, those keywords are going to be used in outreach. Mm. Okay. Now, typically when you do cold outreach, you're looking at a percentage of reply rate of around 2 to 4%. You're doing really, really well. Now, our average campaigns are averaging between 15 to 25% responses. So we're doing probably 600% better than the average.
Yes.
Right. And when I showed this to the guys at Fusion in the previous cohort, they said, that can't be. How is that possible? And we're using templates, by the way, remember, it's still templated. I think that because we know who our ICP is really, really well, and we're talking directly to what they care about. And I'll go a little bit through this email that, again, highlight was able to be successful, and I'll explain how we thought about crafting this email. Guy, any questions before we...
No.
So far, so good? Okay. So I'm going to read it out and I'll explain each part. And again, I can't disclose too much about who this company is for privacy reasons, but I'll say that it's an AI company in the digital health space. So the subject line was AI in a specific area. So that they were addressing. And then - Israel PhDs. Okay. The reason why we structured it this way was very simple. You know, AI is obviously a hot topic that everybody cares about. Two is the fact that it shows that the sector shows that we did the homework, that this VC is looking specifically at that sector. And the Israel PhDs was the idea of, okay, there's some sort of differentiation just from like an early stage, no deep tech solution, right? That was how we're thinking. Then HiX, I understand you invest in early stage digital health startups. That is the only personalization we did in this campaign. Okay. Or if it was a different keyword, that's where the insert would be a different keyword.
Yeah.
So here, what we were doing is we did the research of knowing these guys care about early stage companies and digital health startups. The next stage is name of the company and the problem they're solving. And which is crucial in improving outcomes and reducing the $6 billion a year cost associated with late X, Y, and Z. The reason why we put numbers there is because unless it's a big problem, VCs don't care.
Yeah.
So we go straight, there's a market, it's a big issue. Then we talk about what the problem is specifically in the current solution, which is it's not able to accurately diagnose this issue. And then it talks about, okay, we have a patent pending, got it. There's an AI piece to it. And we have a very deep tech team. So let's look at it. Problem, is there size of the problem? Yes. Okay. Two is there a team that could potentially solve this problem?
Yes.
The CTO led two of Israeli Army's top research units, while the CEO has extensive entrepreneurial experience and a double PhD.
Hmm.
What do we see there? The CTO clearly has a deep understanding, and the CEO has not just the deep education. He also ran a company.
Yeah,
he's an entrepreneur.
Yeah, we can assume founder's market fit from that paragraph,
yeah,
for sure.
And then he's also the legal guardian of his cousin who has this issue. So we added that point here because to show that this person is driven to solve this problem. Because at the pre-seed stage, we care about the team. That's the most important part, is the team and the market is big enough. So he cares about this issue because his own family is directly affected by it. And then we already completed a clinical trial at this location, and it showed this type of success. So there's already traction there. And then here's the important part. Currently, we have a lead investor who's committed $1 million, and we're looking for $1 million funding to compete around. Mm. Can I share a deck with you? So we did not ask for a meeting. We didn't ask for time.
Why would you ask just to share a deck and not a meeting?
Okay, so there's three reasons, okay? Number one is we believe in pattern interrupts. The pattern interrupt, what is a pattern interrupt? You're expecting something when you get a cold email. You know, and if you guys look through your cold emails, probably a lot of them would say, can I just get 30 minutes or just 20 minutes or the people who are really creative, just 18 and a half minutes. Oh, she's not asking for 30. This guy's creative. If I do the math of, imagine a guy, $250,000 salary, you know what 30 minutes cost of this guy's time? That's a big, heavy ask.
And when they reply to that, would you really send a deck or also offer time to connect?
All right. So what happens is, by the way, when we say there's going to be a reply there, the reply is going to be one of three options. I just want to highlight this, the thought process here. One of the options is going to be it's outside of scope. Which is great. You've basically understood that person is not relevant, right? So for example, you say you want a customer, he says, look, I'm no longer at the company. Mm-hmm. That's a great. We just found something out. The second option is going to be, yeah, I would actually like to see your deck. So when we send the deck, what we do is the following. The response has the deck as a link, right? But we don't password protect the deck. I'm against that. And then if you think this is relevant, that here is our calendar invite. Right there. Boom.
Calendly.
Calendly invite.
Yeah.
So they could pick directly the time. Now, what's going to happen typically, again, in our use case is they're going to say, they're going to look through the deck and they're going to forget about it. So what you have to do is you basically have to see in a principle in 7 days, I have to follow up with this individual. Do not, this is an important thing to the entrepreneurs, right, who are listening. To you, you are the most important thing in the world. To them, you are just one more email. So you have to respect them enough to assume that, A, they're not going to respond. Two is, even when they respond with interest, they're not going to reply back to you. It's on you. That goes back to where we started in the conversation. We have to do the heavy lift in the beginning of the relationship. And if we prove ourselves, then other people come and do the heavy lift in the future. Yes. But at this point, you're doing the heavy lift.
Got it.
So I want to show you this funny part here. And then, and as we're closing out, because this is really the last slide here I want to share. Do you know what the response to this email was?
It's written here, 19%.
Oh, sorry. No. The response to the email that they sent to this VC. What was the response you think they replied back?
We don't think it's relevant for us.
So what they said was, typically we don't invest in Israel because you guys have such a powerful ecosystem there. And we don't have a team on site to do due diligence.
Yeah, so why are we so lucky to get this email from you, basically?
That was one issue, right? And I'll explain how they countered that. That's a good objection, by the way. It's an excellent objection. That's why I think Gaia and I actually have a disagreement here. From my understanding is I always believe they need to have design partners of first customers in Israel. Guy, from the previous, you always said, I need you to find customers that can be validated outside of Israel. So we can have that. That would be a separate, when Slides Could Talk podcast. But they said, they gave an objection saying, we don't know if we can, and then his response, which I think was the right response, was one was, we have this angel investor from a very well-known company in Israel who's already invested, and we're looking to have external VCs on our term sheet, on our cap table.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
great.
So we already have been validated from Israeli investors. We want someone from the outside to help us reach to other markets.
Great response. It was 2 weeks from the first conversation to term sheet sent.
Amazing.
Right? So what I'm going to show here, and then we're going to put everything together right now, is for those entrepreneurs who are listening, you start with warm. And warm is trust. If you have to go cold, don't be afraid of cold. Cold 100% works. But cold starts with this notion of, I'm doing the work. I'm doing the heavy lifting. I will do the research. I will personalize it to the extent of, like, I see that this is what you care about. This is where we fit into your agenda. You do not ask for a meeting. You ask for interest. If they show interest, great. You follow up. Know 100% that when you follow up, you will be ignored. And that's why you do, what we advise to our customers is the following. You do 7 days, wait. Then you follow up. You do not follow up, I'm just bringing this to the top of your inbox. You never say that. That is not what you do. You don't say, just check in.
Yeah.
Don't do the checking.
Question mark.
Reply all. No. That is not how you do this, right?
You follow up with the action, right? With a call to action. And actually maybe sometimes even a short one-liner update of what's been happening since you last talked with him.
Exactly. Or what we like to do is say, send them an article. Say, I just looked at this. This seems like really interesting. Like, they validated our assumption. Like, this big consulting group just validated our assumption. I thought you might find it super interesting, right? So never just do, never do this thing about like, just checking in. You are bringing value in the conversation always. You're coming in and saying, I have something to give to you. Here's my gift to you. I'll tell you, with customers that are ghosting me, I often, one of the emails I said to him, I was just during Shabbat, and I say, during the Shabbat, I just thought about you for this reason, and I want to send this over to you.
Yeah.
I was like, because the bottom line is like, this is, I'm a human being. I'm a human being who thinks about you as a human being. Can we have this conversation? Great. So in short, my friends, highlighting this point, I want to end this with the following, okay? And the slide that says, don't hire SDRs, hire executive assistants. This is going to get me in trouble. I want to highlight, I made a lot of money as an SDR. I'm very grateful. My SDR career has been very good to me in the past. Guy told me, don't do this. But in our previous sessions, when I taught the Fusion guys, I literally showed my paycheck. This is what I make, right? Now, why do I say do not hire SDRs, hire executive assistants if you're an early stage company? Number one is that when you hire an SDR, and I've come on board as the first SDR, what happens is the founder is taking warm outreach statistics and paradigm and applying it to cold reach outreach process when they make expectations. They say, oh, I was able to get this many conversations. AKA how? Through my buddies from the army, through my investors. So now all I need is I get another guy, these young puppies out of Reichman Institute, or even better, like an Ola, he's going to get me a lot of conversations. No. Cold outreach and your warm leads are two different worlds. Do not. So what happens is that SDRs have the following silo. It'll take them 2 months to be able to get onboarded. They'll have 6 months of productivity, right? And then already in the 8th month, they're already expecting you to have a career progression plan for them. Now, if you're an early stage company, your idea of career progression is paying salaries the next month. Mm. That's your career progression is you getting a paycheck. That's how progressed you are. So they will either, if they're really good, they will leave after 6 months. If they're not good, they're going to burn out, right? So the other thing that I was saying is SDRs can't social sell. They cannot have the reputation that you have. So they can't use LinkedIn effectively. It can take them a year to get to the same level of social capital as you have now because of your career.
In your industry.
Your industry. So my approach is very, very simple. And I believe very strongly that this is what has to be done now. Do not hire SDRs. You build a process. And what you do is you hire an individual who runs your LinkedIn email effectively. So they are all intents and purposes you. When they call, they are your executive assistant. That's how they introduce themselves. Hi, I'm calling on behalf of John. He thought that we should connect because of the following reason. So calling, email, LinkedIn are all being done from your email, from your LinkedIn. And calling is only you, only coming as your assistants. So there's three reasons for that. A, they follow your process. They test your process. You have to create a process. Two is they had social sell right away. And the third is, unfortunately, there's a lot of turnover in that role. You can basically replace them very, very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So highlight this point. You have only, if you're an early stage company, you have two options. Number one is hire an executive assistant. You can get in the Philippines, someone for excellent for $8 per hour.
Yeah, and they can do all the manual for work for you.
Great. Or get a student from Reichman, pay him 35 shekels, 40 shekels, no problem. Or you go to my friends like David Ziff and others, a Whistle, Pipe, Ariel Levine, whoever you want, and get an agency for 3 months. Get an agency for 3 months, you pay them $20,000, let's say that. But what they can do is they can build out a process with you. Do not hire an SDR to build your outreach process. It'll be a waste of time. You'll burn through money. And also, you can't afford a VP of sales either. So you can't afford that either.
Yeah.
So to summarize, you want to scale up, hire an executive assistant, or go through the route of getting an agency. $20,000 you give the agency, not because they'll create leads for you, but because they'll show you what a process of outreach, cold outreach should look like. And then once you create that, then you could flip back to the Philippines if you want to, or locally.
That's it, we're done?
We're just getting started, but yes.
Alex, thank you very much.
My pleasure, my friends.
It was amazing. חברות וחברים, תודה רבה שנשארתם עד סוף הפרק והאזנתם לי.
אני מקווה מאוד שהפרק יעשיר אתכם ולימד אתכם משהו חדש, ואם הרגשתם שלקחתם משהו מהפרק הזה, אני ממש אשמח שתשתפו אותו ואת הפודקאסט בכלל, כדי שעוד יזמות ויזמים בתחילת הדרך בישראל יוכלו ללמוד על איך להקים ולהתחיל את הסטארט-אפ שלהם. אם אתם רוצות ורוצים לשמוע עוד פרקים, אני מזמין אתכם להירשם למעקב. כל הלינקים למעקב אחרי הפודקאסט שלנו מופיע בדסקריפשן, וכמובן אתם מוזמנים לפנות אליי, או בלינקדאין או באינסטגרם, ולספר לי איך נהניתם מהפרק ומה למדתם, או סתם לכל בקשה ותהייה, גם הלינקים האלה מופיעים אצלנו בפודקאסט. תודה רבה, ונתראה בפרק הבא.